Welcome to the University of Virginia Darden School of Business weekly podcast, better known as the Business Cast. I'm Abina Foreman. It's one of the locations for Darden's new MBA for Executives Global program, also known as GEMBA, and it's a hot-button subject among business leaders, economists, and investors. We're talking about China. Later, we'll be joined by Darden professor Mingjie Chen, an expert in East-West strategies, who will talk with us about managing business relationships between the U.S. and China. But first, the desire to grow global business leaders is, well, a global one. This week, the Darden School Center for Global Initiatives hosted a group of students from the Stockholm School of Economics as part of a reciprocal global business experience. SSE, as it's known, is working on preparing a new generation of Swedish business leaders for a life abroad. Darden is an integral part of that goal.
Well, I think it's pivotal, both from a student perspective in the short run. I mean, that these kinds of things are put into the program as part of the whole experience to make it a global experience in a way, but also from a faculty point of view to get this kind of exchange in order for us to develop the program in Stockholm further. So it's very important both for each student and program in the short run, but also for the long-term perspective.
That was Ilinka Benson, a program director at SSE. The group is finishing up their trip in the U.S. today. In addition to participating in class sessions, the students also toured Whitehall Vineyards and Monticello here in Charlottesville. And while in Washington, D.C., they toured the House of Sweden. Darden not only prepares students for global business leadership, but also for innovation. At the Product and Service Design Fair held late last week, students showed off their inventions as well as their entrepreneurial abilities. The first service I encountered would rid consumers of paper receipts. Subaru.com lets customers of digital receipt retailers sign up at the point of sale, receive a text confirmation and password on their cell phones, and later use the password to unlock their accounts and see their receipts all online.
For our user needs, we went out and did some we did some surveys, and we found that for most consumers, the reason they want to get rid of paper receipts isn't necessarily for the environment. It's more so just to have they can manage their transactions easier. They didn't want to necessarily keep it in a shoebox. So that's been our angle that we're going to position it as. But definitely, we do see the sustainability component and benefit of this service. We actually were talking to somebody earlier who was telling us even stuff we didn't know, that there are certain chemicals in receipt paper that's harmful even for people to touch, right? So anytime you get a receipt, you should be washing your hands and things like that. So this is a service that we can eliminate all of that.
That was Weldon McMillan, MBA class of 2011. His class colleagues displayed an array of products and services that ranged from a device to help kids swallow pills easier to a wardrobe line that makes it easy for busy women to decide what to wear in the morning.
My name is Sierra Cook, and I am in the Developing New Products and Services class here at Darden. Our project, we really wanted to eliminate those 10, 15, 20 minutes every woman spends in the morning agonizing over what to get dressed, what to wear, what if it goes together or not. So our concept is a suite of 15 perfect pieces that always go together. They act as almost a uniform for you, so you know you're going to be dressed well in clothes that fit and really work all together.
After talking to some physicians and people that I knew from my past career who worked at St. Jude's in Memphis, we determined that the biggest hurdle to medicine compliance is actually the ability to swallow pills, particularly for HIV and cancer patients who have to take between 10 and 30 a day. So what we decided to do was focus on pill delivery, and we created a device that's more intuitive for kids. After watching kids eat and drink and play and figuring out exactly what they liked and what was natural for them, we settled on a straw concept. And so what it does is it combines the pill and the liquid together and places it, you drink like you would through a normal straw, and it just places it in the back of your throat. You take two sips and it goes down pretty smoothly.
That was Tricia Bailey, MBA class of 2011. Darden professor Raoul Chow guides these inventors in his Developing New Products and Services class.
Some of them come with very concrete ideas. They have ideas for new ventures, or they've taken a class where they've written a business plan or thought of a concept and they want to make it more real. This class lets them do that. It's a prototyping class. They know that after 7 weeks they'll have a concrete prototype of their idea. But others start from a blank slate. They just want to be part of a process of doing something that's a little different than the case method. So this is a very hands-on class. It's very project-oriented. We really don't even do cases. We do more exercises and focus on their project teams. So they want to go through that process for a brand new idea. A lot of them start from scratch. So you see both groups in this class.
The students often take additional time to refine and perfect their products. Others may go straight to the business planning stage, presenting their ideas more broadly and raising funds. We're joined now by Mingjer Chen, Vice President and Program Chair of the Academy of Management, and the Leslie E. Grayson Professor of Business Administration here at Darden. He's here to discuss bridging the global gap between the East and the West. Thank you so much for your time today.
No, you're very kind. You know, thank you for the invitation.
Well, can you share with us what you see as some of the world's biggest gaps or biggest divides out there today?
To me, I think this is the global challenge, and I think we all confront multiple, you know, aspects. As I mentioned to you, I just finished this meeting with the UNICOM, you know, which is composed of all the head of executive educations. So there you have the gap between the practice versus the scholarship. And I think you mentioned about the Academy of Management, which is very much the most prestigious, you know, professional organizations among management professors or scholars. And another one is truly this notion of East and West. Let me share with you one personal anecdote.
Yes.
Just a few years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, I was in both Argentina and also Brazil. To speak to about 3,000 or 4,000 senior business executives in the region, and also some, you know, flew from the U.S. And 2 days programs, you know, with 7 speakers, people like Jack Welch, Rudy Giuliani, and at that time Giuliani was the hottest, you know, presidential candidate. So he came with 15 or 16, the assistants plus, you know, 4 or 5. Bodyguards,
the whole entourage.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so the biggest concern people had was China threat. So, and then from there, I flew to Italy and spoke in a similar forum with the EU Commissioner Chris Patten and among two other people. 500 people, the biggest concern, the same thing, China threat. And on the way back, I stopped by Beijing, and I spoke there. And another keynote speaker was Larry Lin. Is China's Larry King. And Larry is a very Western-minded, got his PhD in finance from Wharton in the late 80s, so we were contemporaries. The title of his talk was Colonization of China by Western Multinational Firms.
Mm-hmm.
So, what's going on? And this is truly where, you know, my personal mission of the making the world smaller, you know, come into play.
That's an important factor to raise, because you see part of the solution as having approaches and tactics that are both Western and Eastern in nature, and just pulling the best of both worlds together.
So the question is truly not, say, either teaching or research or scholarship. It's not either East or West. Eventually, it has to be both. So somehow, I think each side to have to make certain kind, you know, adjustment. Certainly, this is nothing new. But however, you know, even in the last many years, the whole term, you know, this concept of globalization has become an evolving concept.
Yes.
And even this notion, you know, even early on, is very much a global westernization. Or specifically, the global Americanization. So somehow, I think there will be things that, and especially given what happened in the last few years, I think Americans or the Western world is really looking for new ideas and new business models and fresh, you know, the thoughts. And I personally think this is perhaps, you know, something that, you know, we need to be open, not just to the place like China and India or even beyond.
And when the Western world does business in China, what do they need? What are the tools that they need to hold on to in order to manage the relations inside China?
China is huge.
Yes.
So the implication is that is China one market? And the example I always like, you know, we always think about, you know, the place like Shanghai. But at the same time, you also have this remote West. So from the remote West to the coastal region, literally, according to the Chinese government, you know, the statistics would take more than 100 years to catch up according to the current pace. Mm-hmm. So that means, you know, it's almost forever. So that means, you know, almost each market is geographically or even, you know, purely from the living standards, all the kind of things different.
Yes.
So how can we deal with that diversity? And the example I always like to offer is even Shanghai and Beijing.
Yes.
And the two most advanced cities in China. And if you walk into Starbucks, and you use the Chinese translation, ask for, you know, latte and a cappuccino, and you will find a completely different translation.
Yes.
In Chinese. So that's really just speak to these geographical differences or even economic, you know, disparity.
Yes.
So how, you know, the Western companies, you know, should deal with things like this.
That's an important point.
Yes.
Because I've learned recently that there are smaller towns and
yes,
areas in China that, like Shanghai, like Beijing, are also reaching across the water.
Right.
But they're also doing businesses or doing business and partnering with other smaller communities here in the U.S.
Exactly. So the one implication could be, and especially, you know, given, you know, in those major cities, you know, it's really getting very crowded and competition is intense. So, and, you know, there's no reason, you know, everyone has to be in Shanghai, everyone has to be in Beijing or even, you know, some other major cities. So that's kind of, you know, one reality. And in the macro environment, this is a term I always like to use, you know, China is 5,000 going on, you know, 30. Huh. So that means, you know, it's, you know, this matter.
Yes.
It's like because of the 5,000 years history, but at the same time, this whole open door policy is only kind of, you know, taking place over the last 30 years. So you just do not know what kind of, you know, Chinese you will be encountering.
Yes.
And some could be very traditional, and some could be even more Western, more, you know, capitalist than you can imagine. So I think that's kind of, you know, notion of flexibility, open-minded, is also very important. And the third thing, which I think you put it very nicely, this notion of culture.
Yes.
And certainly, you know, Chinese are very much emphasized on the relationship. And then they even have this special term called the guanxi, which is the, you know, connection and so on.
Huh.
And the loyalty or relationship is very much personal based rather than corporate or even reputation. Let me give you one example. I was with a group of business leaders, you know, from United States and visiting GE's research R&D center in Shanghai. Mm-hmm. So the GE, you know, the you know, representative just made the point that the biggest challenge for GE in China is we don't have sufficient brand recognition and reputation, even for the company like GE. So coming back to these culture kind of things, so I raise my hand and I say, I bet Jack Welch has a stronger reputation than than GE in China. And then this and this person look at me and he say, not only you are right, most Chinese do not know Jack Welch was GE's former chairman and CEO.
Right.
So just give you some ideas, and certainly exactly for this reason, when we do business in China, we have to think creatively.
Yes.
And how to combine this more professional business, non-human kind of transaction with this human touch. So I think this much more expansive view of doing business is very critical.
But on that note, we'll conclude, but I really appreciate your time and for dropping by.
You're very welcome.
Mingzhi Chen, Vice President and Program Chair of the Academy of Management and the Leslie E. Grayson Professor of Business Administration here at Darden. Thanks for tuning in to the Darden Business Cast. We invite you to listen each Friday by visiting Darden's website or by downloading us from iTunes or Podcast Alley. Until next time, make every day a great one.
If you have comments or feedback, please email us at communication@darden.virginia.edu. Darden Business Cast is a production of the University of Virginia's Darden School of Business, along with Darden Media and the Office of Communication and Marketing.